The business world and our lives continue to get more complex. The complexity and turbulence of our ever-changing world may be here to stay, but that doesn't mean we can't face it all head on. All we need is a little bit of mental toughness. So the question is, what defines the mentally tough? What can we learn from examples of people who we know demonstrate an amazing level of mental toughness? We need to identify what they do and what they don't do. To help us with that, Amy Morin is here. Amy is a cognitive behavioral therapist and a nationally recognized expert on mental strength. Her soon-to-be-released new book is titled 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do. Amy, welcome to Success. Great to have you here today.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
So, Amy, you have a personal journey that really showed you the value of being mentally tough and strong. So share that backstory with us so that we could better understand where you're going to be coming from with your insights today.
Sure. I've always been interested in psychology and mental health, and clearly that's why I became a therapist. But in 2003, my interest in mental strength really became personal. It was about a year after I had started working as a therapist when my mother passed away suddenly from a brain aneurysm. She was only 51, and she'd always been very healthy. And in fact, I'd just seen her a few hours before she passed away. So it was really hard to wrap my brain around how someone can be here one minute and then gone the next. And my mother and I had always been very close, so it certainly hit me really hard. And as a therapist, I knew that I had to deal with my own emotions in a way that it wasn't going to interfere with my ability to help other people. And it's tough to do that, to help other people with their problems when I was going through all of these things and grieving myself. But I did. I worked through it. I took everything I'd ever learned in studying psychology and figured out how to apply it to my situation so that I could get better and eventually be able to remember my mom with a smile rather than a tear. And so then if you fast forward about 3 years, life was going pretty well again. And we were approaching what was going to be the third anniversary of my mother's death. And that was usually a tough weekend for me when we approached that anniversary. And so my husband and I had made some plans with some friends to really say, all right, this is how we're going to honor my mother's memory. But, you know, as what so often happens in life, that when life is going one way and suddenly things get turned upside down, on the weekend that I thought we would be focusing on the anniversary of my mother's death, my husband died of a heart attack. And he was only 26. He didn't have any history of heart problems that we knew of. And so, again, he was healthy. And he was here 1 minute and gone the next. And it was similar to the same way that I'd lost my mother, just so very sudden and unexpected. And to lose two people in my life that I was the closest to in such sudden and unexpected ways, it certainly did a number on me. And to continue working as a therapist and to figure out how am I going to help other people with their problems when I'm privately dealing with such struggles of my own, how am I going to do this? And so certainly that helped me understand mental strength at an entirely new level. And instead of just teaching it to other people, I started to live it, and it really became a personal journey for me.
Well, not as consequential maybe, but I'm sure everybody listening can relate on some level, having some unexpected difficulty, challenge, or tragedy that they faced. And so now we're really curious about what you learned to not only overcome that, but then become mentally strong in everything you do from that point going forward. Before I start asking you about that, I'd love to have you sort of set the groundwork for us here about understanding the topic in and of itself. Give us your definition of mental toughness.
Mental strength has three parts to it: your thoughts, your emotions, and your behavior. And they're all related. And to be mentally strong, you have to be able to manage your thoughts. And that means learning to recognize when your thoughts aren't true or when they're not rational. Just because you think something certainly doesn't mean it's true. And overly negative or even overly positive thoughts can be detrimental to us. And so to be mentally strong means learning how to evaluate your thoughts and replace the distorted ones with more realistic ones. And the second part is to be able to regulate your emotions. Now, that doesn't mean you have to ignore your feelings, but instead it's about being aware of your emotions and to understand how your emotions influence both your thoughts and your behavior. And the goal is to be in control of your emotions so that your emotions don't control you. And the third one is our behavior. And to be mentally strong means you have to behave in a productive manner, despite whatever circumstances that you might find yourself in. And often our behavior can really hold us back or sabotage our efforts if we're not careful. So it's about really recognizing and becoming aware of our behavior and figuring out how do you continue behaving in a way that will help you reach your ultimate goals. And I think that being mentally strong ultimately is to be able to live according to our values and our own definition of success.
I agree. And, you know, I'm going to save this for later so that we can keep everybody listening. I want you to describe later, we'll go into it, how do we manipulate, manage, or keep control of our thoughts, our emotion, and drive the behavior that we want. So we'll save that for later because that's a really great outline. And not only what it is, but then how to go about doing it. But before that, I want to talk about why you think this idea of mental strength has sparked so much interest recently. What do you think is driving us to want to improve in this particular area, particularly now?
I think there's a couple of reasons why people are so interested in mental strength these days. And I think the first one is that we've spent so much time talking about physical health over the last few years. And it's almost as if we've forgotten about mental health. And even the term mental health still has a stigma attached to it. And some people feel uncomfortable even talking about mental health or mental illness. But it's clear that there is such a connection between our mind and our bodies that you really can't talk about health without talking about the mental aspect of health. And we're learning more and more every day about the ways in which our mental health impacts our physical health. And everything from our attitude and our thoughts and our emotions influence our physical health. We know that it can influence your pain tolerance and everything from even how long you actually live. And so it's very important, I think, for us to start focusing on not just our physical health, but to look at our mental strength issues too. And what can you do to prolong your life and live the healthiest life that you can?
I had a personal trainer who convinced and proved and showed me that our minds are much weaker than our physical capabilities, that our minds give up before our physical bodies do. And he proved it to me where I thought, this is as far as I can go. And then he said, if you just forget that idea that this is your threshold, you realize that your body could do a lot more than your mind wants to allow it to do. And it's the same thing with our potential and capability. I think we are far more capable. We have far more potential than our minds allow us to realize. So it's really mental weakness that is the great bottleneck to our fantastic potential. So, Amy, before we talk about what mentally strong people don't do, let's look a little deeper at what they do or who they are. Share an example of someone who you think exemplifies the highest level of mental strength and why.
The one person who comes to mind, I think, is Lawrence Lemieux. He was a Canadian sailor, and he dedicated his entire life to training as a sailor. And in 1988, he raced in the Seoul Olympics, and he was considered to be a serious medal contender. And on the day of the race, the seas were unusually rough. In fact, the waves were so high that at one point he missed one of the markers that he was supposed to sail around. So he had to go back and do it over again. But he was still in second place, and it looked pretty good that he was going to be able to still get a medal. But just as he was returning back into his spot in the race, he noticed that there was another sailboat that had capsized, and it was the team from Singapore. It was a two-man team. And one of the men was injured, and he was clinging to the hull of the boat, and the other man was starting to drift away. And he, in that one moment, he had to make this split decision, whether to finish the race and earn a medal, or give up everything that he'd worked so hard to achieve to save these men, because he knew that they may not survive long enough until a rescue boat could get there. And he chose to go save these two men, and he waited with them until help arrived. And he still finished the race, but he finished in 22nd place. And this is a man who pretty much had second place wrapped up. But he was mentally strong enough to know that he'd be okay whether he won the medal or not. For him, it wasn't about achieving that gold or silver medal, but instead, he lived according to his values. And he set his own achievement aside in that split second and said, this is what I'm going to do. And who knows how many other people in that race may have seen that boat that had capsized and just continued on their way because they felt like their self-worth was dependent on winning that medal. But I think that's sort of the true definition of success, is knowing that you'll be okay in life, sort of whether you win the medal or not, but to know that you don't have to achieve society's standard of of success in order to feel like a success or to feel good about yourself.
I like that story. Yeah, that's incredible. So now talk about why you chose to create a list that focused on what not to do versus what most who are mentally strong do.
Yeah, in the therapy world, often we build on strengths and we talk about what everybody should do. But sometimes I think that good habits aren't always enough. And I created this list about the 13 things mentally strong people don't do, because sometimes our worst habits are what hold us back in life. And I think it's fair to say that sometimes we're only as good as our worst habits. And it's similar to gaining physical strength. And the analogy I use is this. If you imagine a person who goes to the gym every day and works out 6 days a week, and after a couple of months, he's disappointed because he's not seeing the results he wants. And he starts saying, "This isn't fair. I work out every single day, but I'm not looking any better." But what he doesn't say is that on the way home from the gym, he goes to the drive-thru. He eats burgers and fries and a milkshake to reward himself for working out. And so, of course, he's not seeing any results, even though he's engaging in a good habit like going to the gym. He has all these bad habits that are holding him back. And I think a lot of us do the same thing in life, and that we have these things that we do because we know it's good for us, but we continue to have these bad habits that are holding us back and that prevent us from reaching our full potential.
All right. So let's look at your list of things that mentally strong people don't do. One of those is that they don't waste their time feeling sorry for themselves. Or as my dad would put it, stop crying or I'll really give you something to cry about. Explain why this was the number one on your list and how those listening can avoid this common pitfall.
Well, I think everyone has felt sorry for themselves at one time or another. When bad things happen, or we miss out on something that we really think we deserved, or there's some sort of a tragedy, it's really easy to dig in our heels and say, "This isn't fair. I deserve better." But every second that we spend thinking that way really prevents us from having more productive thoughts and from improving our situation. And even though sometimes the only thing that we can really change is our attitude, there's still always something that we can there's always something we can change, no matter how bad the situation is. And feeling sorry for ourselves really impacts our behavior too. Self-pity causes us to behave in a pitiful manner, and it perpetuates the problem. And so instead of jumping in and trying to solve the problem, we sit around and sulk, or we waste time complaining. And the longer we feel sorry for ourselves, the harder it is to move forward and get on with life. And that's not to say that you shouldn't feel sad when something bad happens, but feeling sorry for yourself is different. It's this self-destructive behavior that can sabotage our efforts ultimately to move forward. And so the key is to catch those thoughts that encourage us to feel sorry for ourselves. So when you're thinking, "This isn't fair, nobody else has a life this bad," to stop and don't allow yourself to indulge in those kinds of thoughts, but to replace it with gratitude. It's impossible to feel grateful and feel sorry for yourself at the same time. And so instead of looking at what you don't have in life, to start focusing on all the things that you do have. And secondly, is to behave in a manner that makes it hard to feel sorry for yourself. If you're feeling down and out, do something that reminds you that your situation could be worse. For example, you could go volunteer. If you've ever spent any time in a soup kitchen, it's probably highly unlikely that you're going to still feel sorry for yourself when you see people who are coming through the line who probably have much bigger problems than you do. Or if you help out at a homeless shelter, to do something, and certainly you don't have to go to great lengths with volunteer work, but to do things that just remind you that your life's not that bad, and to get up off the couch and do something active, and to remember that if you want to feel differently, you have to think and behave differently.
Okay, so my dad was right again when he said, "Suck it up and stop your sniveling." Okay, so that's good. All right, so one of the things I often say is that we can only control what we control, right? Control the controllables. So on your list is also not wasting energy on things we can't control. People seem to know this, but they still do the, where they get all wound up about those things that they have even no control over. So coach everyone listening on why to let go and how to let go, and then how to never look back once they have finally let go.
Yeah, it's so easy, I think, for us to say, "I'm not going to worry about things I can't control," but to actually do that is a completely different matter. But every second that we waste thinking about and worrying about something that could happen or something that we literally have no control over is time that we wasted that we could have been focusing on things that are within our control. And I think the first step is to recognize what is within your control and what isn't. And that often we try to convince ourselves that we can control a lot more than we actually can. But in reality, you can't control other people. You can't control your competitor. The only thing you can control is your own behavior. And so the most important step is to accept that and to remind yourself that you can't control it. But a lot of people, I think it's very anxiety provoking for them to give up some of that control or to be able to willing to recognize I can't control everything. And exposure therapy is the best treatment for anxiety. And as far as I know, no one has died from anxiety yet. So to be willing to be anxious, to say, okay, I can't control these certain things in my life, and that's okay. And with practice, you'll become okay with that eventually. And secondly, to examine what behavioral changes you can make that will influence the outcome. In the business world, often that means operating the best company that you can. But in the end, you have to accept that you can't control your competitor, you can't control your customers, and you can't even control the market. But you can take steps to increase your chances of success. And so to ask yourself every day, what steps can I take to influence my chances of success? And then focus your time and energy there instead of wasting a minute worrying about the things that you can't control.
So let's go back to the three layers of how you define mental toughness and back to thought, emotion, and behavior. So now that we know what they are, give us a tip or two, a device, a trigger, or something that will help us control or manage or influence our thoughts, emotion, and behavior. Because it's one thing to theorize about it. It's another thing to put it into daily applicable practice. So what triggers, mechanisms, tips, tricks, however you want to define it, do you suggest people do to sort of get their arms around their thoughts, their emotions, and their behaviors?
You know, I think the first thing is just becoming aware. And our old habits often die hard. So to be aware of some of the things that we do that are holding us back. And so when it comes to our thoughts, sometimes we're able to recognize, gee, that was irrational, or that thought doesn't make sense. And we can change it right there in the moment once you become more aware that it's happening. For other people, writing it down is helpful. So if somebody says, all right, I always think the worst about something, to catch yourself doing that and then write it down. So if you think to yourself, this is never going to turn out well, or I'm never going to be successful, write it down and then look for the evidence. What's the evidence this is true? What's the evidence it's not true? And what's a more balanced thought? Again, I think it's not helpful to have overly positive thoughts if you think I can always do everything perfect the first time. That's not going to serve you very well either. But to have a more balanced thought that says something like, with hard work, I can get better, rather than thinking you're either the best or the worst, but that it's somewhere, usually the truth lies somewhere in the middle. And with our behavior, to look at what behaviors do I have that might be holding me back? What is it that I'm doing or not doing that I wish I were doing instead? Or what sorts of things could I do to help me feel differently? And often to pay attention to the way that we feel when we're angry, when we're resentful, when we are feeling sorry for ourselves. Often our feelings show us the things in our lives that we may want to work on or the things that we want to change. And to change how we feel, you have to think differently and you have to behave differently.
So we know that willpower is weak and it wanes, right? It's like a battery life of a phone. The more you use it, the weaker it gets. And then you walk into your home at night and it's gone and all the bad habits and behavior happens. If you could boil it down, give us your number one strategy for staying mentally tough.
Yeah, you're right. It's not just about relying on willpower. That skills like self-discipline are learned over time and it takes practice and dedication. And I think it's not just that some people are either mentally strong or that they're not, but it's a journey and that there's always room for improvement. So my number one strategy is to look at every day as an opportunity to work on increasing your mental strength. And that means paying attention to those thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, and always looking for ways that you can improve. And there are times in life when things are going well, and it's easy to be mentally strong. When you're the most successful person you know, you probably aren't going to resent somebody else's success. Or when life's going really well, you probably aren't going to waste any time feeling sorry for yourself. But the truth is that life isn't always going to go well, that there will be times when tragedy strikes and problems arise. And those are the times when our true mental strength becomes most evident. So I think we do ourselves a disservice if we think we're already mentally strong enough. There's always plenty of room for improvement, and it's easy to allow our bad habits to sneak up on us if we're not careful. So I think it's important to face every day like a brand new opportunity to increase your mental strength and to think, what's one thing I can do today to become mentally stronger and to really monitor your progress over time?
Which leads me to this question. It's something I firmly believe in, and it's checking in with yourself, following your progress, tracking how you're improving. So talk about how we can do a daily check when it comes to our progress on our mental strength. What's some advice that you have for us in that regard?
I think it's to take a look at both your good habits and your bad habits, and to really evaluate sort of how you're feeling about yourself, the world, other people. So often our emotions will tell us how we're doing. And so I think the key really is to look at our emotions, but to also keep those thoughts in check and to really pay attention to the type of thoughts that we have, which at first is hard to do because we don't usually think about our thoughts. But the more that you start to do that, the easier it becomes. So to really notice when you're thinking doom and gloom, or you're thinking all these thoughts about terrible things happening, or when you're thinking that things should be happening differently than they are, to really evaluate the truth behind those thoughts.
So one final question for you today, Amy, to bring our conversation to a close, to inspire us so that we can go working on our own mental strength. Share a story about someone demonstrating, wow, mental toughness that inspired you.
Yeah, I think I had this woman who came into my office, and she had a lot of problems in her life as far as her health was failing. And she didn't have a lot of money, for sure. And she had a husband that could have certainly treated her a lot nicer than he had. And she came into my office and said, you know, I'm here because my doctor said I should have some counseling. And I said, okay, what's your doctor's thoughts behind that? And she said, well, I'm going to be admitted to a hospice program soon because I have this debilitating heart condition that certainly isn't getting any better. And she and I talked for quite a while that day about her thoughts on what it was like to be sort of nearing the end of her life. And now that it was final, that the doctor had told her that there really wasn't anything else they could do. And she made it clear that despite all of that, she wasn't depressed. She wasn't particularly anxious, but instead she felt she'd lived a life worth living. And she was pretty clear that despite everything that she had gone through in her life, and she certainly had quite the story to tell, and despite the problems that she still had in life, she felt like she'd done it and that she'd lived it with the best that she could. And so even though she was facing what was probably the last 6 months of her life or so, and she knew that she wasn't particularly nervous, worried, or even depressed about it. And in fact, she really didn't need counseling. She was okay with that because I think she had a lot of mental strength, and she'd worked through her life on building mental strength. And I think sort of that's the ultimate goal for all of us, so that when we're 85 years old and we look back over our lives, that you can look back and think that you did a good job, that you lived a life that was worth living, and that you did everything you could to reach your full potential and become the best person that you could be.
All right. Well, Amy Moran, thank you for giving us a mental workout. I'm sure all of us listening feel stronger as a result of it. We'll look for your book coming out as well. But thank you for sharing your insights with us here at Success.
Well, thank you very much.
Success Audio Series. Copyright Success Media. All rights reserved.